This is the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Kurt Kavarik with Clean Fuels Alliance America. First off, Alan Clark is a producer from Idaho, newly elected promotion and education chair for the American Farm Bureau.
You know, some of the things as I'm out and meeting people, they're like, oh, do you grow potatoes? But unfortunately, my family hasn't grown potatoes for years. But one of the things is malt barley is one of the top commodities grown in Idaho. I mean, we have a perfect environment for it, and you know, we do really well with that. We're right close to the storage facility, so it works really well for our operation. A lot of the grain, the malt barley that we grow, it's used right there, malted in Idaho Falls. And sometimes if other areas are having a hard time, they'll ship it out to the Dakotas or wherever Anheuser has their facilities.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Kurt Kavarik, who is the Vice President, Federal Affairs, Clean Fuels Alliance America. Kurt, welcome back to the show.
Tony, always good to be with you.
Okay, we've got a lot to talk about today, so just going to jump in. And the last two things we're going to talk about are some upcoming events in Texas. But first, let's kind of focus on what's happening down the street from you and talking about on Capitol Hill, a marine fuels bill. What is this?
Sure. Great question. One area that we've been working with as an industry is to build out new markets for biodiesel and renewable diesel. We all know that much of our fuel goes into on-highway, heavy-duty truck transportation primarily, but we've done a lot of work to build out what we call premium markets, where pressures to decarbonize are significant and growing, and alternatives to petroleum are few. So marine is one that we'll touch on. Other areas that we've done a lot of work, obviously, are in home heating oil in the Northeast, railroads, as well as aviation. But marine has a specific hurdle to its adoption. That is, the renewable fuel standard that was created by Congress 20 years ago explicitly excluded the fuel blended and sold into the marine market from being eligible for participation in the program. So if a biodiesel producer wants to sell to a cruise line, the credit that is associated with that gallon that they're given to comply with the renewable fuel standard does not apply. So we've got legislation that we've helped move along here in Congress. We've got a Republican from Iowa, Marionette Miller Meeks, a Democrat from the San Francisco area, Mr. Garamendi, have introduced the bill back in December. And one thing that's kind of unconventional about this bill is that it's got geographic and bipartisan support. So we've got champions from California, Florida, and the Midwest, and we're seeking more. And what this bill would do is essentially remove that bit of red tape so that the financial incentive or the incentive to comply with the renewable fuel standard can stay attached to that gallon, even if it's blended in the marine sector. And I mentioned at the beginning, you know, we're focusing on markets where the pressure to decarbonize is real, but the alternatives to decarbonization and petroleum are few. So think of some of the largest ocean-going vessels. They're not going to electrify anytime soon. They're not going to find other ways to decarbonize. Our fuel, which is 75% less carbon emitting on average, can essentially be used, drop in to the fuel tank in these ocean-going vessels and immediately displace carbon.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was really a topic that we started hearing about back during the pandemic. We started seeing issues with the supply chain and the ramp up of getting more vessels built, but having that looming decarbonization hanging over them. So obviously this is a perfect fit, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you know, you talk about the lifespan of a piece of equipment. You know, heavy duty trucking might be 10 or 15 or 20 years. Think of the lifespan of a cargo vessel or a cruise ship, and the mechanics in that vessel. These probably have a lifespan of 30, 40, 50 years. You know, you're not going to turn over that fleet, even if you found another technology that was less carbon emitting, whether it was fuel cells or hydrogen or something else. The fact is that the ability to drop in the fuel today, next week, and have those carbon reduction emissions immediate is the real appeal to this fuel. And think about, you know, in Houston, the shipping area that you have there. We've got biodiesel producers along the Gulf Coast where this would be a great opportunity for them in their backyard to feed into this new market and deliver those carbon benefits, the economic benefits, the environmental benefits. So we're hopeful. You know, we're not naive about this. And, you know, when you have a Congress that has difficulty doing the basic functions of a Congress, keeping the government open and the lights on, for example, you know, we're not going into this too naive in terms of how quickly we get it done. This is a good starting point with this bill. We hope to have a Senate companion introduced here in the next couple of weeks. And then we're going to use the opportunity of our conference and other meetings that we're having here in Washington to try to line up additional support, get additional co-sponsors on that bill, and hopefully we can get it across the finish line here not too long.
You know, I think it's kind of interesting. We're talking about the sea. We talk about the land often. And we could also throw air in there as well when it comes to clean fuels. But sometimes one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing. So I'm throwing out the idea for the IRS and the GREET model here. What can you tell us? How does all that tie together?
A great question. What we have is in August of 2022, Congress passed the Inflation Reduction Act, which included a whole host of new clean energy policies meant to reduce carbon, address climate change, et cetera. One of those was a new tax incentive for the production and use of sustainable aviation fuel. And again, enacted in August of 2022, this tax incentive was available for 2023 and 2024. IRS has yet to basically put out the guidance on how to claim this credit. And you hit on a very important point of it. This is the first time, in my knowledge, that IRS has been tasked to implement a tax incentive based on carbon intensity. So Congress said, we're going to provide this tax incentive, and if you can prove that your fuel is a certain percentage less carbon emitting than petroleum jet fuel, you get this value of a credit, and that credit goes up based on how much cleaner you are compared to petroleum. The complicating factor here is we have some environmentalists and others who are pursuing a carbon model to score the fuels that's based on outdated data. It's a UN model that, in our view, arbitrarily penalizes crop-based biofuels. And what we're advocating for is the use of a model, as you said, called the GREET model, put together by the Argonne National Laboratory, a Department of Energy laboratory that sits just outside of Chicago, Illinois, that we view is the gold standard for calculating all of the direct emissions and the indirect emissions from biofuels. So we have folks coming to Washington tomorrow, starting tonight, for about 60 meetings on the Hill and about a half a dozen or so with the administration, not trying to necessarily put our finger on the scale of the science, but just to advocate for the use of science. You know, our problem arises when the models are manipulated in one fashion or another to try to tip the scales to arbitrarily penalize crop-based biofuels. And Tony, imagine if Congress were to create and IRS were to implement a tax incentive that uses a European UN-based model that disqualifies our own American farmers and their feedstock from qualifying for this tax incentive. It's a perverse scenario that only the most extreme environmentalists could pursue. That's our message to the administration and to Congress this week. They've got a deadline of March 1st to update the modeling and convey to sustainable aviation fuel producers how this credit's going to work. Our message is as long as it's based on sound science that we all agree on, the U.S. government Argonne National Laboratory model, then we don't take any issue with this. And we would hope that they don't manipulate this in a manner to penalize arbitrarily based on so-called indirect land use changes of crop-based biofuels to the point that U.S. Farmers can't even qualify.
Well, speaking of flying, there'll be quite a few air miles getting people into Fort Worth for the Clean Fuels Conference. That's coming up in less than a month. And then you turn around and you might as well just move to Texas for a month, because you'll be here at the end of February in Houston for Commodity Classic, a couple of big events.
Absolutely. If Texas can provide weather to us, that's better than Washington with less snow and ice, I will move there for the month. But you're exactly right. We've got our Clean Fuels Conference, which we hold annually. We'll be in Fort Worth at the Omni starting Monday, February 5th through the February 8th. We generally have about 1,000 attendees representing soy farmers, clean fuel producers, major fleets. Pepsi will be there. And I think we're going to have a lot of new audiences from the shipping, the rail, and the airline industry. So that's a great opportunity to engage with us as an industry. We have a great content with main stage panels and breakout sessions talking about a lot of these topics. And then again, we'll be in Houston for Commodity Classic at the very end of February. On Thursday, the 29th, Clean Fuels will be hosting a learning session to talk directly to farmers about the value that our industry, the biomass-based diesel industry, has brought to the soybean farmer, and to talk about new opportunities in winter annual crops that could be better for sustainability, as well as oil producing that we could use as an additional feedstock. So two great opportunities to engage with us and our industry in Fort Worth, and then again at the Commodity Classic in Houston.
Okay, we mentioned you're with the Clean Fuels Alliance America, but we want to keep up with what the organization is doing and even learn more about the organization. Can we do that online?
Absolutely. At cleanfuels.org. You'll find all of our content there, our news releases, and all the activity of the organization. If they wish to pursue membership, all that information is right there online at cleanfuels.org.
He's the Vice President for Federal Affairs with the Clean Fuels Alliance America, Kurt Kovarik, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
CalCon 24 is marching onward to Orlando, January 31st to February 2nd, 2024. Have your say in the future of the industry, network with fellow producers, or connect with friendly faces. Plus, the NCBA trade show will be on site with over 385,000 square feet of the latest and greatest in the cattle business to help your operation stay competitive and sustainable. Register today and learn more at convention.ncba.org.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Kurt Kovarik with Clean Fuels Alliance America.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest Kurt Kavarik, Clean Fuels Alliance America, online, cleanfuels.org.
Countdown 24 is marching onward to Orlando, January 31st to February 2nd, 2024. Have your say in the future of the industry, network with fellow producers, or connect with friendly faces. Plus, the NCBA trade show will be on site with over 385,000 square feet of the latest and greatest in the cattle business to help your operation stay competitive and sustainable. Register today and learn more at convention.ncba.org.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is the Agribusiness Report.
Some adjustments, including USDA's latest changes in stocks within the January domestic wheat balance sheet.
That mainly reflects those stocks estimates from the grain stocks report, as well as some revisions going back 5 years following the latest agricultural census,
resulting in lower beginning stocks, according to World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jackanowski. This, in turn, led to lower forecasted use and a tightening of ending stocks to begin the calendar year.
Year over year, though, ending stocks up about 78 million bushels.
Even with the slight month-over-month reduction in ending stocks,
prices are still fairly soft under some pressure, so we reduced our season average market price forecast for wheat by 10 cents per bushel, so currently at $7.20 per bushel, and that would be down $1.63 per bushel year over year.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.